Can you guys hear, can you all hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Yes.
All right. Good morning.
Hi.
Morning.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm going to share my screen real quick to just for starting the meeting. We had some trouble with the link. I apologize for that. I am in the Lyle Shields room at Brookins Administrative Center, which is required per the revised Open Meetings Act rules. And so far, I've seen a few people, but no one from the public, so I'm not wearing a mask. But there's plenty of equipment here if someone were to show up and hope to participate this way. I think we have, maybe the whole board is here, in fact. So if you all are ready to go, this is, I'm gonna keep track of actions here, but I also have, I can also share the full board packet.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How is the connection for everyone?
Good.
Okay. Great. I'm having trouble with Lynn's connection.
Okay. I'm on the county's internet, so or on the county's Wi-Fi. So I have to be in this room and I'm recording the meeting, so I hope this will work.
Yeah, it just has a little bit of interference. It's a little hard to hear.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Are we ready to start? Call the meeting to order? Can we have the roll call?
Gail Kennedy.
Present.
Deb Roosh.
Present.
Georgiana Schuster. Georgiana?
She's
Georgiana,
on.
Are you muted?
You're muted, Georgiana.
How's that? Is that better?
Yeah. Here.
Okay.
Sue Sluder?
Here.
Ann Robin?
Here. Okay, well, we're all here, so we probably don't need Zoom instructions. Thank you to Stephanie for sending us the Zoom link. And took me a little while to get it to work, but it did work. Can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
I guess we need a roll call.
Deb Ruch?
Yes.
Georgiana Schuster?
Yes.
Sue Suter?
Yes.
Gail Kennedy?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes. Okay, the next item is citizen input and public participation. Do we have anyone on the call that wants to make a comment at this time?
Good morning, Anne. Is this the time that you would like the Forest Preserve to speak to the board?
I think we have a special...
No, you're in the...
I think we have... You're under new business.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Although that would be certainly appropriate to put you at this time. Anyone else? Okay, well, if anyone comes forward later, I will suggest that we allow them to speak because this was fairly early in the process. So, Lynn, are you keeping track of who's asking questions?
Yes, also there is a second opportunity for public participation, but it's agency input, so it's not exactly the same. I think you as the chairperson could, when we get to that agenda item, you could modify that as agency.
Yeah, I think I will keep that open as a chairperson's prerogative, that if someone shows up later, we will give them the opportunity to speak. The next item is chairperson's comments, and I have just a few comments. First, I want to thank everybody for your participation today. And I want to thank the board members for getting in your evaluations of our executive director, Lynn Canfield, and report to you that Joe and I have not yet scheduled a time to get together to finalize that evaluation, but we both plan to do that. In this agenda, we have time for discussion of priorities, decision making, and I do want to spend a few minutes on that when we get to that point. And I wondered, I've made some comments, some notes that I've discussed with Lynn on a one-on-one, and I want to make those public during that time. I also want to announce that we have decided, I believe, and Lynn, you can confirm this, that we are going to participate with the Mental Health Board on November 18th at 5:45 p.m. and do a cultural linguistic competence training. Lynn, is that set?
No, we're still working it out. Everything about scheduling is incredibly complicated this year.
Okay. Okay. So stay tuned for further comments about that scheduling, but I do want to make just a few comments that I hope that everybody will try very hard to arrange your calendars so that you can participate in that. And we've asked Chandra Summerfield to give us that presentation. I'm very much looking forward to that, and I want to thank Chandra for being willing to do that for the two boards. And then in the same light of the cultural and linguistic competence training, our federal government, under the current leadership, has seen fit to put out a administrative directive, which has caused a lot of anxiety in the diversity training community. And I have read a copy of it. It's a pretty bizarre document. That's my personal comment. And there was an excellent discussion of it on WLL Radio just this last week in their program, The 21st, and the title of that is Diversity Training in Illinois in Jeopardy? It's a 20-minute discussion, and I recommend that people listen to it. I just listened to it actually this morning, and I thought it was very good. So those are my only comments. Lynn, do you have some comments?
I'm alone again. I have three things I wanted to share, and I'll try to be quick because there's a lot to discuss later. So first of all, we are in the season where a whole bunch of agency reports come due. We're about 1 week away from the audits, financial reviews, and compilations being due for most agencies. There are a couple of exceptions which have different fiscal years. And And also the first quarter reports are due, and we're hopeful that we will learn more through the first quarter reports about how everyone's doing during the, you know, these unusual times. And we recognize that that a whole lot of services that are provided through DDB funding really do have to be in person. So I think this is, you know, we're all watching this situation with a certain amount of anxiety and a lot of uncertainty. So looking forward to seeing reports. I just wanted to share that because we can't be in the office all at the same time, we're sharing the office. Sometimes, and there are other reasons too, when reports are late or have to be revised, it creates quite a bit of extra work for the staff. So this is not the right audience. I should talk about this with the Mental Health DD Agencies Council instead, but just to be mindful of the timelines. And Stephanie has been sending out a lot of friendly reminders about what's coming due and how to submit it. So hopefully that will help. I think what I'm trying to keep in focus is that we are all living under unusual circumstances, including my staff, and that, you know, pandemic affects all of us and our ability to get our normal job duties done. So I'm a little anxious because this is a big wave of reports. They're really important reports, and it's still about a week before we see them. So that's one. The other is there's a lot of behind the scenes work being done on our Scylla project. It's a very difficult situation. You know, I think we'll probably need to be talking to the state about that. This is there. It really does reveal a structural issue with the rates here are not adequate for here. They're not adequate for anywhere. They're especially burdensome in this county, because Douglas County can do it on the rate, but we can't. Our economy is really different. So just that, while I have not brought you an RFP and it's not time to bring you an RFP, there's a lot going on with that, and I would be interested in your thoughts on the project. You know, just email is best, but you know, during a board meeting we could talk more about it. Anyway, so the RFP is on hold. I did hurry up and do some. Tonight, the Mental Health Board will be considering a resolution to finish this title transfer. And then there's some things I have to do with an attorney to get it finished, and then at the recorder's office. And that's a first step. So the other thing that we have not provided you with a written report about, but which involves a lot of action since our last meeting, is the expo. Virtual expo and the other, so there are four small resource, they're like mini expos spread out October, November, January, and February to feature the sectors of exhibitors. And that work is it's underway, and Kim is putting in a ton of time. It's just mastering the sort of seemingly simple technical issues around providing a virtual event and making it as accessible as possible are really pretty time consuming, and we're learning a lot. And I really appreciate Kim's commitment to this, and I hope that the final products will sit on the website and the Facebook page and be useful to people over the whole year. That's my hope for it. So that's another big one. I think that's it, my three things.
Thank you, Lynn.
And so, I have a question, Lynn, or a couple questions. Lynn, in terms of the Scylla, what would we talk to the state about?
Well, we have heard from the provider and from other providers of Scylla in this community that the state rates are really difficult to work with. It has really, you know, expansion of Scylla capacity has slowed across the state. Many communities have lost Scylla capacity. So we haven't really zeroed in on whether there's a difference in Champaign County. But the rates for this are different in Cook County in consideration of their economy. And it really looks like something like that might be called for here, because there are providers who can make it work in our neighboring counties, but they can't make it work here.
So the state could change the rates for depending on the situations in the counties.
Right, right.
Oh, that, I mean, I'm all for me talking to the state.
Yes, it's a pretty high level advocacy activity, but I think for a long time we've thought this is a statewide problem, that, you know, and really just taking the rates to be a big issue for the whole state. But it really could be that the hardship is very specific here, and, you know, people around, you know, people involved with our SILA project so far all agree it's a great deal. The houses are wonderful. Like, that, you know, sometimes it's hard to get things fixed on time, but, you know, the property manager is very attentive. Like, the problem has been finding and retaining staff. And this, we've heard it from DSC before, we've heard it from CTF. And so and we're hearing it from other organizations, you know, that do SILA in other communities. So yeah, Sue, if you want to put on your boxing gloves, get back in the ring.
I'm ready. Okay. That, I mean, that's such an important issue, and especially with COVID.
Right.
The other thing, I understand that because of your great write-ups, which were wonderful, I think, on sort of the state of where we are in the community. Those were excellent. The history, the COVID stuff, I want to thank you and your staff. I thought they were very, very good. And Kim, when I was reading your report, per what Lynn said, you did a lot of work on the expo. I wasn't able to be on last week, but thank you for all your work. That was a lot. One question. How was the attendance at the virtual expo, or, you know, the virtual thing last week?
I think it was lower than we had hoped, but for the first one, I think we, you know, we understand that, like, it was the first one and a lot of people have stuff going on. So we are leaving the registration open this time planned up until the week before and doing a big social media push, hoping to reach as many people as possible. And
okay.
The registrations are coming in. I looked yesterday late in the afternoon, and I think there was 12 or 13 people who had registered so far.
Okay.
Some being steering committee members, but, you know, hopefully we're spreading the word broad.
Okay.
Thank you.
I just figured out how to raise my hand, but I do want to interject if I could, and really just kind of follow up and second what Sue's questions and your narrative about the problem that we're having specific to Champaign County. I think the research is and employment problems are manifesting themselves here. Pre-COVID, Champaign County was one of the only growing Central Illinois and really Illinois in general communities. And I think post-COVID, we're going to see that Champaign continues to grow when others don't. And yet the rates that DHS provides Champaign County, DSPs in particular, and just funding in general, is more similar to the rural counties around us. And I believe we can probably prove pretty easily that that's a huge detriment to us, to our residents, and being able to secure service provision for the individuals we're charged with serving. So I think and I want to also thank you, Lynn, you and your staff for the priorities document. It was excellent, especially the additions of the COVID information, as Sue said too. But I think that this is a real hot button issue for us and very much worth exploring.
Yeah. Cuts across everything.
It does.
Especially now.
Right. So thank you.
And thank you for those comments. Those were very, very well spoken. Does anybody else want to say anything in relation to our executive director's comments at this time? Okay, the next item is approval of the minutes from last month.
Do you want to see on the screen here?
The minutes?
Do you want to see him? I'm...
No, we had him. We had him. If you haven't read them by now, it's a little too late. Would anybody who's read them like to make a motion?
I move. Oh.
Second.
Any discussion other than my comments about reading the minutes? And thank you very much for the very readable minutes. Are we ready for roll call?
Georgiana Schuster?
Yes.
Sue Suter?
Yes.
Gail Kennedy?
Yes.
Deb Rouge?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes. And I mean that about the readable minutes. They're really excellent. Item number 9 is expenditure lists. Everybody's had a chance to look at the expenditure lists, and I've had my questions answered. Is there a motion to accept the expenditure list?
I will move. I will make the first motion to accept the expenditure list.
I will second that.
Okay, discussion on the expenditure list.
Was I right? Do you think I was right when I... The question that Ann and I talked about was prairie wind. And I thought that was speech therapy.
Yeah, I think you're correct on that one.
That is correct. That's a mini grant.
That was $400. That was a mini grant item. That's why I was like, prairie winds. What's prairie winds? It sounds very nice. I don't know what it is, but it was speech therapy.
Speech therapy?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And last month you all approved for that person to use the previously allocated Camp New Hope funds for more speech therapy. So you will continue to see prairie winds on there.
Okay. And now we know what it is. Any other discussion? Stephanie, would you do the roll call?
Sue Suter?
Yes.
Yes.
Deb Rouge?
Yes.
Georgiana Schuster?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes. Okay, now I've got new business, and the first item on the new business is a presentation by CU Able. The second item is Champaign County Forest Preserve. In case you're waiting for your turn, it will be coming up very soon. Is CU Able presentation available?
Hi, I'm Diane with CU Able, and I did not put together a formal presentation because we were hoping to be able to show off our brand new website, which is not going to happen this morning. So I'm just going to talk to you a little bit about where the website is. I'm going to talk to you about a few of the other things that CU Able has been doing over the last few months, and go from there. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Diane Gordon. I'm on the board of directors for CU Able. I came to that group because I have a beautiful 8-year-old daughter who has some learning differences, dyslexia, ADHD, autism, apraxia, and a couple of other random things. So I found kind of a tribe of people with some of the moms at CU Able, and have been using that group as a way to advocate for our kids over the last 8 years. Let me start with our website. Through the Disability Board last year in our grant, this is my beautiful daughter, Rory. Say hi.
And she is beautiful.
Hi, Rory.
Hi, Rory. Hello. Some so that we can do things to teach you guys better, okay? Please let me have this.
Can I have these?
Yes, you may. Go see Dad, please. Okay, that's it. Thank you. Okay.
So, that's perfect.
That was very appropriate.
That was.
Our website, we are, through a grant through you guys, we are working on getting this new resource website developed, a CU Able website, along with this resource guide for the area. And it is, I've seen the website, it's beautiful. I'm so excited to show it to you, hopefully next month. It has this resource area that is very visually pleasing. It's got a robust feature. Currently, we have about 90 national, state, and local resources listed, and they cover the gamut from medical providers like speech therapists, occupational therapists, recreational opportunities like our local CUSR, camp, the one up north of Bloomington, Timberwolf, and a couple of other things like that, education, parent support. So it's very robust. We have a nice form that's developed so that as people come up with other resources that they think should be on the page, it'll be very easy to add them on and put them into the new site. So I'm really looking forward to being able to present that. The developer that we had enlisted is up in Chicago, and unfortunately he ran into several issues with losing his home during the riots, and then he and his wife also ended up hospitalized with COVID about 3 weeks after that. So they're getting back on their feet, and they've been very attentive, but obviously are running a little bit behind what was anticipated. So hopefully next month we'll be able to really show that off for you. In the meantime, we've been pretty busy with a lot of different things, and I thought it was important to let you guys know what else we do as a community other than just being a Facebook group, because that's our number one thing for providing parents support. But we also do a lot more than that. Throughout COVID, we have had parent support meetings going on kind of towards the beginning of the pandemic lockdowns and stuff in March and April. Through May, we were having weekly online Zoom support meetings. And we had some pretty good attendance. I was surprised how many people came out for those or came online for those. And then of course, as people got used to what was going on, that slowed down a little bit, and we went to kind of every other week, and then at the beginning of school back up to weekly, and now we've kind of gone down to a monthly version of it. And I think that's still very important that people are able to get the support they need and talk to other people who are going through some of the same sorts of situations. Right before school started, we had a meeting, which I think we had about 40 parents online, along with the director of special ed from Unit 4. We invited all of the local school districts, Danville, Tolono, Unity, Mahomet, Urbana, and Champaign, to do a parent town hall sort of meeting with the special ed directors to kind of get an idea of what school was going to look like this year. Unit 4 was the only one who was willing to participate in that. I think they were the only ones that we had enough people who was to make it really viable for them to participate. But it was a really good night. I think people got a lot of good answers and felt a lot more comfortable about going into the virtual year as it was starting. And hopefully we'll be able to use that as a launching board to have more school involvement directly with the parents in the special ed community locally. The other thing that we do every year is the Moms Retreat, and I know that the parents are really missing that. And if we've been brainstorming some ideas on how we might provide that sort of support to parents, we've talked about things like a virtual retreat, which I'm not sure that's really retreatful because you're still have your kids standing there and, you know, asking questions. We've talked about maybe renting out a local hotel and just giving parents their own room and just letting them be for a weekend by themselves with no interruptions. Giving like a go pack of, you know, here's 4 meals or 5 meals in boxes, and here's a package of crafts and relaxation things, and just go hide in your room for a weekend. I don't know how valuable that is. I think it might have some value. But anyway, we're kind of shooting around ideas like that. And if any of you guys have ideas, we would love to hear them on how we might be able to help give some of those parents some respite. I think that's really needed right now. And I don't have a good solution for them. One of the other things that we're working on right now is in the past, DSO on campus has done a Christmas party for kids where Santa comes and everybody gets a little specialized present that another student at U of I has bought for them. They have crafts and games and stuff. So we're working with DSO and the Down Syndrome Network to try and come up with an alternative event for that. And it's probably gonna be something like a drive-through Santa event where they'll get like a go pack of a little present and some crafts and games and that sort of thing put together. So as we learn more about that, we'll certainly get those details out to the community. And then the thing that's been taking most of our time this year is our partnership with Good360 and FedEx, Walmart, and Lazy Boy. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that with you guys. There's a group called Good360. I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with it, but it is an organization, and I'll just read their mission statement here. Good360 helps companies resolve the business challenge of responsibly distributing excess goods for maximum impact, and in doing so, we help our nonprofit partners deliver on their own important missions. Individuals facing challenging life circumstances get the goods they need, generating hope, and products are given a new life, reducing waste and helping build resilient communities for the future. And really, that has been such a keystone for us. We have partnership with two people through them, two companies, Walmart and Lazy Boy. With Lazy Boy, what happens is they will get chairs, like the big recliner chairs that for whatever reason were returned to them. So somebody got into their home, didn't like the color, sent it back, and they don't have a way to get those back into another home, so they give them to us. And we have in the past given those to group homes through DSC and kind of ran low on that list. So we opened up to members of CU Able. And then the last 2 months, we've been able to deliver 4 beautiful Lazy Boy chairs to people who have that need. So that was one thing. We were also able to secure 300 early on in the pandemic. And I think I talked about this last time I talked, we were able to secure 300 packages of antiseptic wipes, which, you know, a year ago seemed so trivial and now it's such a big deal. And so we were able to get those out to 50 families in the community who were really desperate to get cleaning supplies. And then with our Walmart distribution program through 360, it's been a little slow this year just because they're not taking returns. But basically what happens is anything that's returned to Walmart, depending on its condition, will then be sent back, will be gathered up, and then we pick that up once a week. And then every couple weeks we have a little giveaway through our CU Able website where people can come pick things up. The significant things for us through Walmart this year were that we were able to give away 5 brand new bicycles to kids who didn't have bikes, which is fantastic. And then we had 2 of the Barbie, those giant motorized kind of cars. We were able to give away 2 of those, which were, you know, those are like $500 that we were able to just give away into our community. So that's been a wonderful partnership. And then the new one that we have been working with is FedEx. And I was trolling along on Facebook one night and there's a young lady who works at FedEx who said, "Hey, anybody out there who needs some cleaning supplies? We don't know what to do with all these." So they have a program where if they have boxes that get broken or are undeliverable for whatever reason, they're trying to get those out into our local community. And so I reached out to her and told her a little bit about CU Able, and we've developed a partnership where weekly we go pick up, usually it's about 2 van loads of items. It's usually somewhere between 2 and 800 items a week. It's everything from Clorox wipes, Clorox bathroom cleaner, Monster drinks. I mean, anything you can think of. It's the most random pile of things, but a lot of them are shampoo, makeup, diapers, wipes, formula, all those kind of things. So with that program, we've given over the last 3 months, we've given over 3,775 items to over 500 families within the CU Able community with that program. Which is amazing. We've also have 300 16 ounce bottles of personal hand sanitizer, which we have repackaged so it's ready to go out to the schools when they reopen for the special ed teachers. Hopefully we'll be getting that out next week to Champaign Unit 4, and then we have some in storage for Urbana. We've given away several hundred diapers to Crisis Nursery. We've given dozens of gallons of cleaning supplies to the food pantry at Garden Hills. We've given several boxes of personal hygiene products away to the Danville VA for their group homes. And with some of the material that we were given by Walmart, several hundred masks were made in the Champaign-Urbana community and given out through the Carl Make a Mask program and then out through some personal donations. So these programs we couldn't do without you guys and your support. Ways that you support us is that you help us pay the membership to Good360. You're helping us right now pay for our storage units to bring all these items in and repackage them and get them out to the community. And just the general, you know, support of the community. So I thought it was really important to let you guys know kind of where we are with these programs. It's also had some other unintended consequences, which are actually very positive, in that we've had several families who otherwise weren't particularly involved in anything who have stepped up to really help volunteer. So we really appreciate that. And we always are needing volunteers to help us just pick up product at FedEx, pick up stuff at Walmart, get it back to our facility, get it unboxed and organized and then out to the community. So I just wanted to kind of fill you guys in on all that, and then hopefully next month we'll be able to give you a view of that website. So any questions I can answer for what we're doing?
Diane, as a result of your family support group, what would you say are the number one or two pressing issues that they're dealing with right now?
I think the thing that parents are really struggling with right now is social activities for those kids and figuring out their time, like working from home and just finding child support for that child. I don't know what all of your experiences are, but it can be exhausting to have kids, period. Kids who have extra needs that we've got to be taking to 4 or 5 therapies a week or whatever, and trying to fit that into the new Zoom world. It's just exhausting. Okay. So I think the most important thing we can try and figure out right now, and other people can tell me I'm wrong, but if we could find out some way to give some of those parents just a break, some sort of break, and get those kids involved in something, I think that would work wonders. I just don't know what it is, because it doesn't feel safe to be out in public yet, especially with the kids who are more medically fragile.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Also, I just wondered how many parents or groups of people, entities, are in your CU ABLE organization. Do you have a number on
sure.
that?
So our current Facebook group is almost up to 1,500 people, I think, now. And we have people joining. It seems like we're having more and more people join now than we have in the past. So I think, which I think is indicative of the need in the community to have that parent support. As far as active members, I don't know if Caitlin is on. My feeling is that we have probably 1,000 of those people who actually do interaction on the website in some form or another, on the Facebook group in some form or another. And then when we have in-person groups, in-person meetings, it's generally probably 30 to 50 families that will come out in various forms, either to, not all at one time, but there are probably 30 to 50 families that actively come out to in-person events.
Thank you.
So I think the online support is really important, because a lot of people just can't find ways to get out too.
Yeah.
So.
Diane, thank you very much for that excellent presentation. I learned a lot, and I want to give my support and appreciation for all the work that you and the other people in CU ABLE are doing. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm going to scoot because I need to get somebody to tutoring.
Okay. And I loved your daughter and your cats in the background. It was just great. I was paying attention to your talk, but it was nice to have them there. Hello.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you, everybody.
Okay.
You're welcome, Florida.
Great job.
And bye.
Thanks, you guys.
All right. That was wonderful. My heart is warmed. And we can hear now from the Champaign County Forest Preserve.
So I want to, before we start, I want to make sure that I share with you in the way of a disclaimer that we have done some research since the last meeting, and according to the county code of ethics, we can't officially endorse anything that's on the ballot. So just, you know, we can spend some time looking at the presentation, but we can't do any kind of formal decision with relationship to this work.
And yeah, and that's fine. You know, we really are mostly just interested in making sure that that people have an understanding of kind of who we are and what we're doing, why this is on the ballot. And it was so valuable. I'm so glad that Diane actually was ahead of us, because these are the sorts of opportunities, I think, that we look for as the Forest Preserve. I have this amazing staff, this amazing programming and education staff, that through a lot of sort of one-on-one relationship building, we are able to look for ways to offer what we can here at the Forest Preserves in these 4,000 acres of nature, ways for people to get out. I don't, I'm definitely going to follow up with Diane and Caitlin and hook them up with my programming and education staff to see if there's a way that kids can come out here for an afternoon in nature. I mean, you know, it's not a weekend away at a hotel, certainly, but maybe it's a way to get kids out, get parents out, something away from the everyday. I don't know. Those are the kinds of neat opportunities that just being on this call, sort of come to mind. So anyway, I should start. My name is Mary Ellen Wallner. I'm the executive director of the Champaign County Forest Preserve District. And also on the call today is Bobby Harakovich. Bobby is a member of our Board of Commissioners. I have actually a slightly shorter PowerPoint. Can I share mine instead? I took a few of the slides out just to...
Yeah, I just had to get myself out of the way.
I made it just a wee bit shorter. Looks pretty much the same, but anyway. So coming up, as you probably know, there's an election in a couple weeks. November 3rd is the election day, and probably many of you have already voted. We've had these opportunities since September 24th to vote early, but the Forest Preserve has put a referendum on the ballot. It is most likely, depending on where you live in the county, it's probably one of the very last things on your ballot. So you've got to flip the page over and it's way down at the bottom.
Hi, I'm Bobby Harakovich. I was here a month ago and I feel like I'm some kind of a distant cousin to this board. It was about 35 years ago that four of us started CUSR. The Champaign-Urbana Special Recreation Program through the Park District. So I kind of feel like I'm related to you all, and I really appreciate the time you're giving us today. Most of you probably know Lake of the Woods and Homer Lake. You may not be as familiar with some of our other sites. Our other forest preserves are the River Bend Forest Preserve in Mahomet, which has the largest lake in the county. We also have a forest preserve, which is, I think, is, I call it out by Gifford. It's one of my favorites because it's just pure nature. It's got a swimming beach occasionally. Sometimes we don't have the water quality we want, but we're working on that with some of our capital improvements. It has a campground. Recently, I was out there doing some canvassing and meeting people from that visiting the park, and it's amazing the economic development that some of our preserves bring into the county, because people are coming in and buying gas and stopping for water and ice for their picnics, and they're coming from outside of Champaign County. Sangamon River Forest Preserve is also one of the forest preserves, another pure natural site. Great to take the kids out there for a hike along the river and wear off some of that excess energy that they have. And I think you probably have also heard of the Kickapoo Rail Trail. That's been in the news pretty much the last year. And that's been a project that actually has been worked on by several different groups for over 30 years. And this is all amazing since I consider myself only, you know, like 45 years old. but anyway, we're pleased and proud of all of these sites. We think that they bring opportunities to the community. You know, they are not only ensuring the protection and conservation of natural areas, but we provide quality educational programs for all ages. Those include the Museum of the Natural History, where we offer historical and cultural programs. Most recently, one exhibits on the Civil War and women's rights and women's voting. We also do the educational programs at Homer Lake that concentrate a little bit more on environmental education, protecting, you know, our natural resources, et cetera. And we really work hard to remove the perceived barriers to participation, whether they're real or perceived, with our accessible boat docks and having one of the first accessible fishing piers in the county, a grant that went through the Community Foundation of East Central Illinois and the Kellogg Foundation. This pier was built many years ago, several years ago, I'd say about 7 or 8 years ago, and is fully accessible. I think that we have seen in the last, probably year or so, our counters, Mary Ellen, I believe, have showed that our participation or our visits to our parks have actually doubled during this pandemic.
That's right. That's right. We certainly in the early stages, and when the county was in phase two, I believe, of the pandemic, we saw people really seeing the benefits of being out in nature. I think people, when kids, you know, were home from school, having to homeschool, and parents were working from home, and there just wasn't, you know, sort of the entertainment and recreation opportunities maybe that people were used to, we saw people discover the forest preserves. And as Bobby said, our visitation, our trail and traffic counters showed that visitation was way up. And we hope that that continues even after COVID is in the rearview mirror. But why is this on the referendum? Well, here are some, or on the ballot, here are some examples of what we're looking at here at the Forest Preserves. And I'll talk a little bit about our financial situation that just sort of built this backlog of capital projects. So some of these pictures that you're looking at here, picnic shelters, our roads are in pretty bad shape, buildings, roofs are in need of repair. Most of our facilities now, particularly at our older preserves, Lake of the Woods has been open since 1948, and Middle Fork and Homer Lake were opened in the 70s. But these facilities, in some cases, are 40 to 60 years old. And just like if you have an older house, you sort of understand how things, you know, start to age, things start to fall apart. And we simply don't have the financial revenue to address everything that we need to do under our current situation. This picture at the bottom left corner, this is the spillway at Lake of the Woods. If you've driven through here lately, well, in the last like 6 years or so, You've seen construction fencing up around that spillway. We're in danger of sort of losing that, and that will have real impact on the structural integrity of the lake if that feature deteriorates any further. Over in the lower right-hand corner, this is a picture of the Homer Lake Interpretive Center. This is where we hold environmental and cultural education classes. These kids are actually having class in the storage room because we have no overflow facilities for kids if the weather is such that they can't be outside. Certainly not an ideal situation given the demand we have for programming these days. So as I mentioned, we do have about a $3.7 million capital and maintenance project backlog currently. But here's the financial situation. So if you take a look at this pie chart, this is what your property tax bill sort of looks like if you live in Champaign County. And you can see that little blue slice of the pie at the top, that's the amount that the Forest Preserve receives annually. I live in Urbana, so on my property tax bill, I pay into a cemetery district, which is the smallest entity on my bill, but the Forest Preserve is right behind that at less than 1% of my taxes. But that's really not the total picture. The other issue that is really impacting us today began back in the mid-1990s when tax caps were on the horizon. Most boards took that opportunity to set their bonding rate at an amount that would be sustainable for the long term. In a very fiscally conservative gesture, our board did not do that. And in fact, they set our bond capacity at about $200,000 a year. So that makes up, even with the CPI increase, still today we have a capital budget of about $245,000. So as I mentioned, we have 4,000 acres of land and buildings and roads and dams and bridges and lots of infrastructure. That just simply is not enough to address what we need to address. And that bottom line, that is that we just can't continue to do our conservation mission and maintain and upkeep the facilities that are entrusted to us by the residents of Champaign County. So if you haven't voted, if you have voted, either way, this is what you will see on your ballot. This is the language that is set by state statute. This is not something that our board wrote up or that I did. But what we're asking for is a little over 1.5 cents increase per $100 of assessed value. And that's what that first paragraph says. The paragraph I think that is most meaningful for people is this paragraph here below the ballot. And this is the actual impact on a homeowner. So if you own a home and it's valued at $100,000, for example, the increase, if this referendum is approved, would be $5.33 per year. And the reason that they choose that $100,000 figure for the ballot is so that people can do the math to their own situation. So again, it's a very, very modest increase that we're asking voters to consider. Just some more figures here. Again, that $100,000 homeowner, $5.33. The median home value in Champaign County is about $157,800. That person would see an $8.42 increase. And then of course, since 92% of Champaign County is in farmland, we wanted to give some examples for the owner of a farm. And so it comes to a little over 10 cents per acre would be the increase. Whoops, I went too fast. There we go. Bobby, that's you. Nope, you're muted.
Thank you. So this is something that we've been talking about for a long time. Our advisory committee has recommended that we go forward with this referendum because it is an urgent need. This was pre-pandemic that we planned this, so it's just going to be a little bit more of a challenge during today's times. We are looking at the potential closing of some of our facilities due to some unsafe conditions. Our roofs are moldy in some places. We may have to raise our user fees. or reduce hours for the museum and the interpretive center. You know, some of the amenities that we offer just might just have to be replaced will probably have to be closed. We would hate to have to freeze our levels of participation, especially when they've grown so much during this pandemic. But we are going to have to reduce some of our maintenance responsibilities and cut back some of those operational responsibilities if we don't have more funding. So we're really looking at something that's very necessary to our residents and our visitors. And we hope and that you will take our message out to your friends and your other family members and be happy to answer any other questions you might have for us today. Thank you.
Thank you for that presentation.
Does anyone have any questions for us?
Well, I don't have a question, but I do have a comment. And we're adhering to the legal guidelines that we cannot endorse another tax-based agency because we are a tax-based agency ourselves. However, we have a common mission, and it is good to recognize that we do have a common mission. And as a person who has used the forest preserves for decades and taken my disabled son out to nature areas also for many decades, I want to say that I really appreciate the efforts of the people at the Forest Preserve, and I think it's an excellent facility all over, and I wish you a lot of success. I wish us success.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking the time to listen to us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for presenting.
Great. And I see that Diane gave me her phone number, so I'm going to reach out to her after the call.
That's great.
All right, thanks.
Do we have people from Watch Me Grow or the Watch Me Grow brochure that was in our packet, or did we just look at that?
Yeah, it's just to look at. So Watch Me Grow is a program that was developed by a previous DD board member, Dr. Gingold, who also had a cheese store that you might remember. This is a labor of love for him and based on many years of research. And I guess since COVID, it's really taken off and a lot of people are using it. The program essentially provides families with some activities that are developmentally appropriate to their child. For, I think it's a, Kim, you may remember this better than I, but I think this is done in 6-week periods. So they track children's developmental progress and then send them the tools, the activities which should be useful during that time. So it's a nice program. I think that we would like to share it with the Birth to Six Council and the Home Visiting Consortium to see if they have any interest in using it or helping families check it out and then, you know, letting us know if it's a good resource. But Dr. G has made that available to us. So that's why it's there.
Okay. I do have a question about it. It looked very nice. Is there a cost to families for this service? It's completely free.
I don't think there's a cost. Kim, do you remember? We've talked to them about it, but it's been a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's free.
Any other comments about the Watch Me Grow? Almost makes me wish I had a young child so I could use it.
It might be interesting to check it out and see what he's got there. He's very happy with this as a result of years of research and he's happy to see people using it now.
Okay, we've got successes with other agencies and I'm assuming that we have a couple of agencies that would like to share some successes.
Ann, do you want to go back to the priorities memo before the agency success?
Oh, I missed the priorities memo. You know, I had it circled and I missed it. Sorry.
And I'm really happy to share that I've already had input from two board members, which is really great. So anyway, we're off to a good start.
Okay. I'm sorry. I was my eyes skipped the CCDDB allocation priorities and decision support criteria, which is probably the most substantive thing for us to discuss today. And I just want to take a little bit of a poll from people about how they're doing with time, because I felt like these presentations were so excellent that I didn't want to limit their time. So I didn't really put a time limit on them. And I don't want to put a time limit on the allocation priorities discussion, but I do want to respect people's time and ability to stay on the Zoom meeting. So should we open this up for discussion and then reevaluate in about 10 minutes and see how people are doing with the discussion? Does that sound good?
Yes.
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 Okay. Well, I have 10 o'clock on my watch and clock. So I would like to open it up for discussion about priorities. And I did make some comments on a yellow sheet of paper here that Lynn and I looked at. It's a little bit crumpled because we were walking outdoors while we were discussing this. And I then stuffed it in my pocket.
Yeah, I had
but I would love to hear people's comments.
Ann, I just have, again, I think I want to commend staff on, it's a really well-written, comprehensive document. I'll just look forward to comments from the agencies that we serve and from families in terms of, given COVID, just in terms of these priorities and any comments they may have to make sure that we're hitting the mark on what we can be doing this year. I also have one request, and I can do this just individually with staff, but on page 29, it talks about Medicaid managed care and how that's affected IDD populations. And I've heard about, you hear about that for years. I know they've been working on it, the suburbs of Chicago. I would love, a little history or a little background on that issue. And I don't know whether, it doesn't matter, I can, like I said, I can do it individually with staff, or we could put it on as an agenda item, whatever. I would just like a little more information.
Okay, thank you for that comment. I actually had Medicaid managed care as one of my top three comments. I have had some experience with it as a healthcare provider. To say that it complicates things is kind of an understatement.
That's a perfect example, Anne. To hear from you and families and individuals and providers, physicians, healthcare folks on the state of it,
yeah.
What it means.
Yeah. I think it's definitely one of the elephants in the room in the state of Illinois.
Wow.
So I think that you're right. We should have a large conversation about it at some point, but just really quickly, there was a rumor. It was, somebody heard somebody else saying that Illinois is not ready to do this with DD and won't be ready to do it for another 4 or so years. That's just a rumor. But because
okay.
Something like that, I think, okay, we can just table it, knowing that it's like possibly a freight train coming at us, but at least it's stopped right now.
Okay, great.
Maybe.
I think Medicaid, the Medicaid low reimbursement rate affects all of our priorities. It really does affect all of our all of the, I think there's 7 priorities, and I think it affects them all. So it has to be dealt with in some way.
And Lynn, I would leave it up to you and to Anne about if and when we would need to put it on the agenda. As you said, I think if it makes sense to table it because we have a lot on our plate, I'd leave that up to you and Anne.
Okay. Well, I think it's something that warrants maybe even a study session. And I will take that comment, and Lynn, you and I can talk about what we might do with this to inform ourselves more about this important topic so that, you know, I agree. I think it's a very elephant in the room, freight train coming, whatever. It's a very important topic, and we need to understand it more. Other comments?
Yes. On the same page and the following page, 29 and 30, the point about residents who are eligible, enrolled, but not yet have Medicaid waiver awards. This is something that I've been confused on, and I just continually need to seek clarification. It says PUNS enrollment at the end. PUNS enrollment creates an opportunity to establish a person's eligibility, justifying the use of local funding to provide relief for those who are waiting. But we know that the monies that come in through the state and Medicaid waiver are not always sufficient. I guess I was wondering, is a family, even though it's very helpful for them to have their name pulled off the PUNS list, is it also a disincentive for agencies due to a lower rate of reimbursement from the state versus what they get from us as a county in supporting those people before they are pulled off the PUNS list? And again, we may have talked about this before. I just need a little bit of clarification on this, and it may not be applicable to all programs that we support.
I think it is absolutely applicable to all programs because you're already paying for the statewide service. You know, that everything the state is doing, we're paying for. And then we're paying for local stuff too. So in order to avoid charging Champaign County taxpayers twice for the same thing, we have some things built into the contract. They're also in the funding guidelines. This money should be the last resort. So in every way, like it should be the last dollar used if there's Medicaid dollars available, and also the last fund that families should rely on if state money is available to them. So that's built into all the contracts too. So this is a really important issue. I don't, managed care is as well, but managed care is not right in front of us like this is. So I might, there's a risk of me rambling, but what's happening is that when families or when a person enrolls in PUNS, the state does not pay for an eligibility determination at that time or require it. Locally, we do, because this is a way that we can understand if everybody who's waiting on PUNS is actually eligible for a service, and then therefore they could be funded for services through a locally funded program. So it's because the eligibility requirement is identical for the DDB and the state, we just take care of it when people enroll in PUNS. Therefore, we have a more true sense of how many people are actually waiting and actually eligible in Champaign County than most other counties do. So we can look at the state data and we know that it's true that people who are enrolled are actually eligible. So that said, like, that's good news, but the bad news is, and Equip for Equality doesn't always say this, but it really does appear by every measure that there are 19,000 people across the state of Illinois waiting for funding and on the PUNS list. 19,000. So that's a long way. Those PUNS selections happen once or twice a year, but they are they do not pull all those people. It's going to be slow covering those folks. So there will always be a place for the local funding. But you are absolutely right. If the local funding is adequate, compared to actual cost, it can accidentally create a disincentive to taking the state funding, which is not adequate. I think we have sort of an ethical dilemma there. We know that the state funding is not adequate. So should we also offer inadequate funding? I think this is a line we've been walking for years, just absolutely at peril of what you said happening. But we really do mean for Champaign County residents to have a good deal.
Thank you for helping me through that again, Lynn.
I just want to draw people's attention to page 30. I had circled and starred the top paragraph on page 30, which I think is almost a mission statement for our priorities. So I would encourage people to read that paragraph again and think about it in the context of what we've been talking about, how we're trying to coordinate services, not duplicate services, and not pay for things that should be paid for by the state, but to improve services for people. I think that's basically what it says. And improving access to resources too.
Right, those 4 points in that paragraph I agree, are very important.
I think that's almost a mission statement. I don't know who wrote that, but it's very, very good. Okay, we are at 10 minutes. What is the group's feeling? Do you want to continue with this discussion a little bit further, or do you want to move on at this point?
These are up for voting. We're going to get input now, correct? Or we're getting input, and then these will be up for voting in November or December. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I think it'll probably be in December because we're not really sure what's going to happen with the November voting meeting.
Okay.
We've had scheduling difficulties and we're not sure exactly. We've got options. We could have another discussion meeting in November. But I think you're right. Lynn, is she right that we're going to vote on this in December because this is a mandated thing that we have to do every year?
Struggling with the meeting schedule. It's the big sticking point is that I have to sit here. Like by law, I have to be here. And I can't be here if somebody else has the room booked. So your usual meeting was November 18. And if I could somehow get that meeting date back, it would be perfect for considering other business. We will probably have to have a December meeting anyway. I think we can handle, you just did a really busy meeting last month. I think you can handle a meeting with a whole lot of business. And you all obliged me yesterday with individually letting me know if you were available. We have a quorum. So I don't think there's a problem if all of this has to wait till December. But I did write to our attorney. DDB is represented by the state's attorney. I wrote to them asking if it would still count if I were sitting in my office on November 18, if we could just have the regularly scheduled meeting. So I'm still waiting to hear from that. And then as Anne has suggested, we do have another issue to discuss when we are talking about the scheduling, which is to maybe provide a joint study session instead. It's a very high priority for the mental health board to do, and Chandra is ready to do it. So if people are available, that's what we could do in November and then hold the business to this. I'm still trying to figure it all out though. We will see.
My main concern is I would just like to see all the comments from families and our service providers before we vote on it in December. Whether I read those or whatever, it doesn't matter. I just want to make sure that we see the input.
Okay. I did send it to a city council person who's interested in some of this. Kim has a long list of stakeholders to share it with. Normally, we wait till you've had a chance to see it and then we send it out, but we will absolutely share with you all the comments. And And please do contact me if you have suggestions or questions or comments. I already incorporated some comments I got yesterday.
Okay, well, we are now, we've got 2 minutes left if we give ourselves 5 more minutes, and I'd like to take the prerogative of taking one of those minutes and just draw your attention to 2 other items. I think, again, this was a very well-written document, and I think there was a key statement on page 33 having to do with the challenges due to virtual day services. And then on page 37, and I had asked Lynn this question when we met personally about coordination of services in order to provide more efficiency of services. And I asked who is doing this, and Lynn told me. So Lynn, would you like to tell the group who is actually coordinating services?
Yes, and I thought of more examples too. So what our really stunning example is the Home Visiting Consortium, which is a group of maybe 8 providers of early childhood services. Not all of them are funded by the Mental Health Board and the DD Board, but the ones who are funded by the Mental Health Board and DD Board actually can collaborate because the funding allows them to. And then those who don't have that funding, you know, or like who are fully state funded typically, don't have money to collaborate. So it is 100% because of these boards funding that this group is able to work together. Their goal is to make sure that all of the children in Champaign County have access to early childhood services as early as possible, including the like a slightly modified version of the nurse family partnership. I might have said that wrong. Maybe Gail knows the name.
I know what you're talking about, and I'm blanking on the name right now as well.
An evidence-based model, and Patrick Kennedy was just hyping it yesterday on a statewide webinar. But locally, the Carl Healthy Beginnings, I think is what they're called, has modified it because what they wanted to do that's not allowed in the evidence-based model is provide the service to parents of second children. It's normally just for the first child. So that just makes all the sense in the world. So I love the work that this group is doing. That's an incredibly well-coordinated group. The Birth to Six Council still exists, and they're all involved through that too. So that's our favorite example of real collaboration.
So what I'm getting from you, Lynn, is that because of the way we're funding, they have actual resources to coordinate services, so they are coordinating services as part of the mandate, and they have funding for it.
And then there are some other examples. There's the Champaign County Transition Planning Committee, which we don't fund at all, but many of the agencies that we work with participate in that. Kim also participates in that. That's important because they are coordinating for young adults, you know, who just get lost after graduation. So that's another important coordination. And then another one that I just thought of is for over a year now, maybe 2 years, Kim has offered training opportunities to the case managers from any agency. And they have selected many of the topics that they do. It's a monthly workshop format, and they get CEUs for it too. So it's nice to be able to offer free CEUs during these really difficult financial times for agencies, and they have they have opportunities to talk with each other, which was, that was really important to us. Anyway.
Okay, well, those are very good examples. Thank you very much. And then there was one other, I'm over my 1 minute, the reporting of full hours for service, a person present or not, we're in the community, this page 38, having to do with reporting requirements. And I read that paragraph several times. It was a little bit difficult for me, but basically what it comes down to is the work that the DD board has done and the staff have done have made it possible for people to do the required reporting with less time and effort than it used to be. Is that right, Lynn?
Where we started was too complex, and it was really creating a, I mean, we were getting also asking the agencies to tell us about the reporting. You can see how much time it took them to report under the old categories with quarter hours. So Kim simplified it in a couple ways here. And we're right now in the first year of this slightly less complex claims reporting. So hopefully on the first quarter reports, we'll see less reporting time, we hope. More service, less reporting.
Well, we have to have reporting. It's required and it's necessary, but it's a task that takes away from direct service provision for staff, and we want to make it valuable. Okay, any other comments? We're at almost 20 minutes.
I have one other comment. On page 33, expectations for minimal responsiveness, I thought, you know, we have 5 points there. I was wondering whether the addition of a sixth point that would basically be evidence of planning for how will services be provided in a pandemic issue like this. Just putting that in as an expectation. I know we talked about how this has really changed things. We hope we won't have to go through another pandemic. However, other illnesses and epidemics may come up and may change the way we provide services, and being able to plan for how to provide for people in that, I think, would be an important expectation to build in. Thank you.
All right, Gail.
So, Lynn, if we want to add that as a sixth point, what's the mechanism for doing that?
Well, at this point, all of the suggestions that people make, we try to document, and then the next draft that we see will have, you know, I don't know if highlights are really hard to show you, so we might have to like italicize or just list what the changes are in the document, but the next document you see will show revisions.
And okay.
This one, I mean, this, I don't see a downside to that one since we've discussed it in other places in the document. But really, clearly, that's important, at least to me.
It emphasizes it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other comments before we close this discussion and move on?
I do want to tell you one thing that I'm really happy about this, and I'm sorry that it took years to figure it out, but in the listing of priorities, these are not ranked priorities. It's not like the very first one is the most important one, but I think psychologically we do that anyway. So I finally put self first. I decided maybe it's time to say self-advocacy is like really, that really is important. And we really want to see that as the beginning. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. All right, well, I'm going to move on then to item E, which I tried to jump over to right away, successes and other agency information. Do we have anyone here? Did we lose everybody?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, Annette, you're right there. Thank you.
So 1 week before the shutdown in March, we had a very successful open house at the Crow. And then the following week, everything was put on hold. We had plans for more open houses. As soon as we were able to reopen in September, one of the first things people wanted to get started again was making soap. And so we're really excited. We're going to do a holiday sale online. We have 14 different scents. We already have an order for 25 gift boxes that we're selling individually, as well as a pack of soap and then a 3-pack with a wax melt. This will go to a lot of area businesses. And then to get the card making group involved also, each gift box will include a handmade gift card that the sender can include with the gift. So even though we're kind of still not able to open up to the public, we are very excited about our first online sale. And then Ann, in response to your question last week about whether or not any of the agencies used either the Forest Preserve District or actually any of the outdoor spaces, a lot of our groups, you know, our goal is to help people lead a healthy lifestyle. And so we do use a lot of the park districts and YMCA for indoor stuff, but we've used Buffalo Trace in Mahomet. We use Meadowbrook and then Lake of the Woods, Riverbend, Homer Lake, Kickapoo. So we really try to use the outdoor spaces as much as we can. Thank you.
That's great. All right.
Thank you, Annette.
I have, Annette, what's the website for the online holiday gifts?
So I don't know yet. There, okay. Obviously, I'm not the technology person. We're in the process of kind of finalizing that, and then also how people will pick up the product. But I will definitely get that information to Lynn and Kim.
Great.
You know, some of the, again, I'm just really impressed. We have some really remarkable staff who are able to lead this. I was able to get a sample sliver of Grandma's sweater. And it's got cardamom, and it's even beautiful to look at. But I'm just really excited about, you know, about the product and people being able to enjoy it.
It's a great idea.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else want to share a positive success? All right, well, we'll hope for more later. We do have some other business. I don't think we have anything else that we have to vote on. At this time, we've got utilization summaries, pages 43 to 47. And I did have a brief comment on that. And my comment was I was very impressed with how well local agencies have been able to do to provide services to individuals. And I also thought that the reporting was very clear, and I appreciated it.
I have a question.
Yes.
Showing my basic lack of knowledge. Under utilization targets, there are some initials that I don't know. TPC, NTPC, CSE. Can someone tell me what those mean?
Georgiana, let me refer you to the very end of your booklet where every single acronym is spelled out and explained extremely well, and it's in every booklet. And I'm very proud of it because I had the same problem when I first joined the mental health board. I didn't know what they were talking about with all their initials. Yeah. So starting on page 55 in your booklet, every acronym that's in the document and some that are not are explained.
Okay.
And I think those particular ones are treatment plan clients and non-treatment plan clients is what you're asking for.
Okay.
TPC, treatment plan. So those are clients that have a treatment plan, and NTPC is clients that do not have a treatment plan. And then there's another category that's SC that stands for I remembered what it was and now I forgot. Service contracts or screening contacts. Those are big ones. And I think the explanation actually tells you what a treatment plan client is.
Okay.
It does. I have so to look some of these up every time.
That's a very valuable thing that I'm very happy that we're continuing to have in our board packet. And I think that's also available in the online resource so that anybody can look those up.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for asking that question.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right, because otherwise it's like, what are we talking about?
Yep.
We could add that to the very top here. Paragraph. Spell them out in document. I think that what's happened is this document is pulled from a different context. So I think everybody knows what an NTPC is, but you know, we even have staff discussions each year about what should count as an NTPC. So this is not a small question, and if you
right,
I mean, we could add brief definitions at the top, just not even definitions, but spell them out at the top.
Okay.
This is kind of a legend.
Yeah.
That would be a good idea. That would be helpful, I think, to people that are looking at these things.
Because honestly, this document is really, the context is for the public. I mean, this is sort of an annual report. May I help you? Oh, I don't know. This is the Developmental Disabilities Board meeting. Okay.
Okay, somebody just came in the room. Okay.
Customer. So anyway, I really appreciate this document. Kim completed this. I think that the most important thing that I learned from this is something that I say to you twice a year in the documents, and that's that the programs are not easy to compare with each other. But it really is apples to oranges. And I like that we can give each program like just a little bit of like a moment in the sun in this document. And so I appreciate all the work that Kim put into it. I also want to point out at the very top, there's a reference to the performance outcome reports. The PY20 performance outcome reports is a labor of love that's undertaken by Kim on behalf of the DDB and Mark on behalf of the Mental Health Board. Each year, these reports are between 300 and 400 pages each. And they are a collection of everything that agencies are telling us about what they accomplished for the year in their performance outcome report. They're literally all the performance outcome reports combined in one document and posted on the website. So it's a lot to read. It's very, by the time we get it all together, it's, you know, we've run out of steam and it's hard to read them all. But I did have occasion to answer a simple question about criminal justice for the mental health board. And I found 12 report, maybe not that many, reports that have been submitted to the mental health board in this format, and they were really useful. So I think if you're ever interested, we post that on the website because it's too big to give to you in a board packet, but the information is really interesting. And in some cases, it really reflects the agency's mission and vision. Anyway.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I found this to be in a very readable format, and I very much appreciate that. Quarterly reports, pages 48 to 50. Any comments?
We included it just because you asked about it in October and we happened to receive it not long after. So we thought, what a coincidence. We're showing the 211 report for Champaign.
Okay. And I thought that was interesting too. Any mm-hmm. other comments about 211 quarterly reports? Okay, so we've got the schedules and timeline, and I guess we are still a little up in the air, and so what we're going to have to do is look at our emails and pay attention to them and answer availability. We don't know about a November meeting at this point.
Right. So the 4th and the 30th both present some practical problems. You all have been really great and really responsive and open to virtually any date I'm throwing at you. And I appreciate that so much. The technical problems with the 4th and the 30th really make them not my favorites. As I said, I've made one last attempt to get November 18th at 9 a.m. for a regular board meeting. But what we're thinking about right now, and it would be, I would appreciate your thoughts on this. The Mental Health Board has a meeting scheduled for November 18 at 5:45 p.m. And Dr. Robin and I talked about possibly doing a joint study session on that at that meeting, at which Chandra can do CLC training. Since the boards have never done it. It'd be so interesting.
So Lynn, if we did that, that would not be a meeting, that would be a study session.
Right.
Okay.
And Stephanie might advise us that it doesn't even have to be a study session because it's educational. We can talk about that, but really the question now is everyone's availability and then what happens in December. So what I don't know yet, because the Mental Health Board has 9 members, I don't know if we will have a quorum of the Mental Health Board in December. And if we don't, then I would probably propose to you that we flip this and do a study session together in December. So you all got back to me. I really appreciate it. Now I'm just waiting to hear from the attorney and from Mental Health Board members.
Okay, but we do need to have at least one more meeting this calendar year, either in November or December, because we do have some things that we have to vote on, such as the decision priorities.
I would say the three-year
document.
Plan, the most important things are the three-year plan and the priorities document. Also important to me is a contract, a meeting where you discuss my contract. But if that doesn't happen, that can happen in January instead. The really most important things are priorities and three-year plan.
Okay.
And you will be also there are some changes that we need to make to the intergovernmental agreement between the boards regarding the ownership of the Scylla houses. So that should be a core item.
All right, and we've already discussed that, so. Okay, moving on, I will draw your attention to the acronyms and glossary, which I already drew your attention to, but I again want to thank whoever put that together. It's very, very helpful. And I think putting, if it's some kind of key words like treatment plan client, it would be good to put that at the beginning of whatever that document is, would be good. Any input from the Mental Health Board?
They have a meeting this evening with fairly similar business. But they will, like, as I said earlier, they have a resolution to complete the transfer of title from Mental Health Board to DD Board.
Okay. Staff reports, very much appreciated, very well written, very informative. Thank you very much. And people have been busy, and I can see that, and especially Chandra has been just stellar and a very excellent report. Thank you very much, but they're all good. Board announcements. Georgiana, I wanted to ask you, I got an email about a webinar that you're the contact for. Do you want to talk about that very briefly?
I am on the NAMI board, the local chapter of NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And NAMI in the past has had educational programs at the Champaign Public Library, but because of the COVID, we're doing it on Zoom now, at least for the next few months, till we get the all clear. And so this program that's coming up in November is being, it's a webinar being put on by the State of Illinois Comptroller's Office, and it is about Illinois ABLE, which is an investment vehicle for people. People can have an account under Illinois ABLE that does not affect their benefits. If they have Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, it does not, this particular type of investment vehicle does not affect their benefits. So this is a...
And this is relatively new.
I don't know.
I learned about it a couple of months ago, and I had never heard of it before, and I understand that it is relatively new in the state of Illinois.
Okay.
Isn't the ABLE Act a federal law, but now they're working on the Illinois portions of it, or the Illinois interpretation of it the last couple of years?
We can find out more by attending this this webinar and ask those questions. I don't know if it's come.
So Georgiana, if we want to attend this webinar, how can we get signed up for it?
You send an email to Nami Champagne. Do you know
the Okay. Champagne? No, because the brochure that I got was not clear as to how to get signed up for it. Usually they'll give you a link, but they didn't do that.
Okay, the Nami Champagne email address is Champagne Nami, all one word.
Okay.
At AOL.com.
Champagne Nami, AOL.com. And maybe we can put that in an email too, so that it'll be easy for people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, thank you very much. Sounds like we could all benefit from participating in that webinar. Any other board announcements? Any successes or special things? All right. Well, I would say it's a big success that we're all here, and thank you very much. And I guess we don't need a motion to adjourn. We can just all wave to each other, smile, and we'll be adjourned, and we'll be looking for further announcements. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great day.
Thank you.